B-Pod Studios.
Sub. Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Down. Download the Sports Hub app today.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub, no!
It's the
Bengals. Did that count?
Yep.
With Joey Bag of Money.
And the Onion.
Okay. Get help today.
And Fist of Cash in his chest.
Oh! 98.5, the Sports Hub. It is Joe Murray, Dan Lifshatz. The Bankroll Boys are brought to you by the all-new Sportsbook Rhode Island. Now open at Twin River and Tiverton Casino Hotels. The only places in New England you can legally bet on sports, powered by William Hill. Get your details at sportsbetri.com. Joe Murray's wife is here. It's very exciting.
Yes, we carpooled together today.
Carpooled? Now you have another job today?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So you are 7 days a week.
Yes. I'm here nights and weekends, and yes, punch in at 9 and leave at 5. That kind of life.
You guys are both dressed nice today.
Yeah. Dan does the same thing.
Yep.
And he's getting married in, what, 2 weeks?
2 weeks, August 3rd.
Attaboy. Excellent. Congrats. What's the? Have you done the bachelor party yet?
It is next, not this weekend, the weekend afterwards.
Oh, okay. Weekend. What does that involve? Where does that involve?
We're going to Nashville.
Oh, that's nice. Okay.
I'm not exactly sure what it involves. I just know that I was told it's, you know, don't expect a lot of sleep, so that was about it.
Just know that in Nashville, the bachelor parties are outnumbered by bachelorette parties about 3-1.
Perfect.
That's what I've heard.
Okay. Mounds and mounds of cocaine. Very little sleep. Are you still going to gamble, do you think, while you're out there?
Probably not, honestly. I'll probably bet on sports, like, you know, on my local or whatever, but I probably won't, like, you know, I'm not going to go to, like, a casino or anything.
Yeah. But you still will be keeping an eye on things.
Of course, yeah. So that's what us degenerates do. Right?
At your wedding, on your wedding day, at any point, Joe, did you check out?
Yes.
No. I actually made a corny post that said, "This is the only pick that I'll make today." And it was the pick of the
That's just vomiting.
Oh, my goodness.
How about that?
Did you put the over-under on years?
People actually taking bets.
Nice.
Like how long the ceremony was going to be. Oh, yeah. I told it was going to be real quick, like under 10 minutes. And people were like, yep, you were right, under 10 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, Sarge and I put that together of over-under, how long everything's going to be, how many over-under, how many beers it's going to have. Yeah.
Well, okay, so I'm heading to Vegas today. And, you know, once a year when I go out there, I just try to put money on some futures. The NBA just released their over-unders and also odds to win a championship. What's the best value I could get right now? Because I'm looking at the first thing I thought, obviously, you know, concentrating on the Celtics, is that the 48.5 games that they have seems to me like they could probably go over. Like, the East doesn't seem extremely tough this year. Outside of Milwaukee, I know that they're going to have about like 3 or 4 teams that are going to be pretty good. But 48.5, that seems like a doable over. Am I wrong in thinking that?
No. You guys know I picked the Celtics under last year. I was very strong on that.
Yeah.
On this show, very strong on that. I actually think they are the best team in the East. I know that sounds incredibly wild. Every single team, and Fred, you're going to hate this. Every single big bettor that I've spoken to, all the guys who bet large money way more than I do, I hate the 76ers, mostly because of Ben Simmons. I'm not kidding. I'm actually dead serious. They think he's not a good basketball player. Against the spread last year, he was one of the least valued superstars against the spread for Las Vegas. And the thing is that, you know, that they added Al Horford from Jimmy Butler. So, I mean, they have Tobias Harris as well, but lost a lot of three-point shooting. And the problem with Horford is he just doesn't play a lot of games. He has the degenerative knee, and Embiid has playing games issues. So in terms of the regular season, people view the Celtics and the Bucks as the number one and number two seeds because they think the 76ers are going to have a hard time keeping everyone healthy as well as hitting three-point shots.
Wow. Okay, so now the Sixers have an over-under of 53.5. I mean, that seems fairly low. I mean, that's only 2 games behind the Clippers, who right now are the highest at 55.5. So is that a safe bet to take the under, you believe?
There's value in that, at least.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, they have bench issues. Like, they lost J.J. Redick. They got a bunch of acquisitions last year that moved on. T.J. McConnell always crushed the Celtics. So, to me, like, the way I look at it is the Celtics won 49 games this year. They're not a better team by any means. Like, you lose Kyrie Irving, you lose Al Horford, you're not a better team. But I just feel like regular season wins are going to be important to them. It's all about a sell this year to the fans, personally. That's what I think.
Sure.
I know we've had the discussion about the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown thing, and this has nothing to do with gambling, but Ben Simmons getting that big contract, it now puts pressure on the Celtics because
Agreed. Are
you going to retain Jaylen Brown? Are you going to move on from him? Do you think he's a $170 million player? I don't. And then the following year, it's Jason Tatum. You got to start to make a decision on him.
You really got to look at it this year. I mean, it's both of them. Like, this year is for both of them because you're putting Jason Tatum in the spotlight this year. You're putting Jaylen Brown in the spotlight this year. If neither of those guys step up, your team is in serious trouble.
So if you're banking on them, I would take the over.
So what you're saying then, obviously because of the Simmons contract, is that Tatum, expect a huge year. Because he's going to want to get paid the same way the Simmons just was.
And I think this is the year where they'll decide. Like, Jaylen Brown, to me, I just don't think is worth $170 million.
Well, he's a complimentary player. He's a two or a three. A three, I think, on a really good team.
He's not a two. No.
Well, he's a two on a good team, a three, if that, on a championship team.
Yeah, I mean, he still has plenty of upside, room to grow into his body, but... Yeah, I mean, in terms of upside, he is probably at best a three on a championship-level team. Tatum has a legit chance to be a one or two.
I agree.
Probably more of a two than a one at this time.
I think this
after
time.
Last year, but...
Well, again, last year, his game, and I've said this to Fred many times, his game obviously did not mesh with Kyrie Irving's. And now that Irving is out, and Walker, although he scored a lot, was forced to do so based on the roster around him, I think Walker will be... subjugate his game? I can't think of the right word.
Right, but
he'll pass the ball more is what I'm trying
agreed.
To say.
And while you see a lot of gamblers, a lot of public guys, media guys, whatever, it's talking about how great the Sixers are going to be and how great the Bucks are going to be, you're seeing a lot of people down on the Celtics when it's in the actual markets, very opposite. You're seeing a lot of love for the Celtics from the sharp bettors and actually the opposite for the 76ers, even the Bucks, just because of how wild their expectations are. I think they're like plus 153 to win the East, which is just, I mean, I think Philadelphia is a better team than them. I think Boston is probably a better team. I think that, Indiana might be a better team than them. Yeah, I think they're going to take a step back.
I like Indiana. I think they had a very good offseason.
Yep.
The other team is Utah in the West. And I'm still curious what's going to happen with Chris Paul. It sounds like Miami's somehow going to get involved. The Milwaukee Bucks need to get involved. If you can get Chris Paul as your point guard to play with Giannis, I think that makes them the sure favorite in the Eastern Conference.
All right, so looking at the NFL odds right now, you have two teams. This is just from like 2 days ago. You might have a different book, but the two teams that are favored, both the Patriots and the Chiefs, at 6-1 odds. How confident are you? Who would you put money on when you go out there?
If you're going to Vegas, I'd bet the Patriots at 6-1.
Yeah.
Right, why not? I mean, again, at this point, the Chiefs, I think they're going to actually have a down year.
Now, why do you think that?
I just think Mahomes. Remember last year you didn't like Mahomes? Every week.
I was so wrong about Patty Mahomes.
But,
it's not even funny.
But I feel like
I will take that L. I was wrong about that.
It's going to turn around. I just feel like these players have those kind of years where they get hyped. And, who knows what's going to happen with the wide receiver, with Hill. So, I mean, we'll see what happens there. But I think the Chargers, they have to get their running back situation squared away with Melvin Gordon. I think he deserves that contract. I think Dallas should be better. You look at all these teams this year. Even Cleveland. I know a lot of sharps are on the under with Cleveland.
I'm going to disagree with them on that.
Now, what do they have? Nine games?
9 games, yep.
I think
they're loaded, dude.
They think they're going to be 500.
Again, it's about finding value in the market when you're looking at sharp. You're looking for value. And in terms of the actual value, it's definitely on the Browns under. I'm going to be kind of a more square, take the Browns over. I do like that. I do actually disagree with the Patriots' take. I think they're going to struggle this year. Not in terms of the regular season, but I don't think winning the Super Bowl, I don't think there's a lot of value on that bet. 7-1 is what I have. I wouldn't do that. To me, Dallas at 23-1 is something that I do very much like. And again, this is early. We're still pretty early in it. The Colts, 13-1, I think is a legit possibility.
And the Bears are getting too much love, if you ask.
Agreed, yeah. And that's another team that's getting overhyped.
The Bears, like, what are their odds? Oh, my God, yeah, they're way the hell up there.
Yeah, they're 15.
They're a good team. Their kicker missed a field goal last year. That was the difference why they didn't advance.
Even with Trubisky, you think that this is a team that could possibly win a championship?
No.
No, I just think their odds are too high is what I mean. I fade that.
Yeah.
Don't follow that.
You fade there. Don't follow that one.
You guys didn't talk about Pittsburgh at all, and it seems that there are two clear sides to this. Some people think they won't miss Brown and Bell too much, and other people think they will. Where do you guys fall on this?
They're going to miss Brown.
Yeah. I just think personally that team's just in the mix every single year. And is Baltimore going to take that next step with their quarterback? I don't know. So, yeah, they're going to be right in the mix there. It's just, can Cleveland overlap those teams? That's the big question. I think the talent's there. Is the coaching there? And then is Baker Mayfield? Is he the guy, Fred? I think that's what it's going to be.
Well, I think that Vegas is very smart. They know what they're doing, and they realize that just because you add an elite receiver does not mean that that is going to change your fortune.
I think Mayfield's a douche. That's the reason you don't root for him.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not a douche. He takes publicity photos with no shirt on next to a tiger.
Doesn't make him a bad quarterback.
I don't see his ceiling being overly high.
I agree with Fred. I don't think that he's going to be that good of a player, but I do think that because of what they put around him this year, they're going to be a better team. But in terms of actually, like, everyone loves Baker Mayfield, is so hyped on him. I think when it actually comes down to it, Baker Mayfield would be a good NFL quarterback.
I bet on Baker Mayfield. That guy's got balls. I want to bet on that guy. But at the same time, I don't know if it's the Browns. That's the issue.
But the division's down this year.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Baltimore could be surprised. They were last year. They had a great defense last year.
I think Pittsburgh will be better than most think. I mean, I think you're probably looking probably 9 to maybe 10 wins for Pittsburgh. They're going to struggle passing-wise. I mean, again, Roethlisberger used to do those, like, two-yard dumps to Bell 6 or 7 times a game, and he would get a ton of yards. I know they missed that last year. But now you can't go over the top to Browns, so now it's a very different offense. So they're going to have to rework it. I think they're still going to be successful. I don't like Tomlin as a coach. I think he's actually one of the more overrated coaches in the league. But I do think that the Steelers as a team still have a lot of talent, a good quarterback. I think they'll find a way to get 9-10 wins still and possibly sneak into the playoffs.
What about Sammy D? What are you thinking about Sammy D?
Yeah.
What's the Jets line?
The Jets are now 55-1.
No, what about the over-under? It's like 5 games, right?
Yeah, I think it's actually like 6 or 7 now, or maybe.
Vegas got some confidence in Sammy.
Well, they made a lot of moves in the offseason, so I would take the under on that if it is indeed 7.
I agree with Fred. I think that the Jets are probably going to be an under team. I actually think the AFC as a whole this year is probably going to suck worse than most years. Mm. I think the Bills are going to stink. I think the Jets are
Dolphins
going to
tank,
back.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the Dolphins could be the worst team in football.
Yep, and the Dolphins. So exactly. So but you're going to give the Bills and the Jets almost 2 automatic wins there. So the question is, do they win out the rest of the schedule? But the AFC has a hard schedule this year. So I mean, you know, they have a lot of tough games. You go take a look at what they're doing. I don't love any team except for the Pats. I think 11 is a little too short for the Pats. 11's probably 11.5 is probably.
That's another thing, Rich. You got to go with the over.
Yeah, the Pats win every year.
It's free money. If you're really going to push, it's free money.
If you want to bet the Pats win total over 11, and I would bet them to win the AFC, because what happens is you probably get them, I don't know, like 2 or 3 to 1 to win the AFC. It's 3.5. So you get them to win 3-1. They're in, 10 conference championships in a row? Mm. Well, then when you actually get to that game, you can then bet the other side and still make money no matter what.
Yeah. All right, the Stone Cold Lock of the Week is brought to you by the all-new Sportsbook Rhode Island, now open at Twin River Casino Hotel. What do you got?
I assumed you didn't have
anything. I got one for the weekend, but okay. I did bet that there will not be a hole-in-one in the British Open. So
Even
money. It's minus 130 that there will be a hole-in-one.
Hang on, it's even?
Even no, yep. No hole-in-one.
Okay, well, I'm betting that when I show up then. Tonight when I'm going to.
Hopefully it's still on the board, because it might probably go up if there's none today.
Wait a second. So how often are there holes-in-one in major championships?
I didn't really do a lot of research on this one. I just kind of saw it in front of that. I was like, looks too good to be true.
Yeah. Hey, there's a lot of people on that. That's the one thing that scares me. It's like every golf town has that. I'm going to take the Dodgers and the Phillies over 9 today. I've not been doing well in baseball you know, kind of heads up. Nolan Stripling, afternoon game, a lot of runs in Philadelphia recently, over nine there between those two guys who are usually under pitchers.
And this weekend I have Manny Pacquiao's fighting this weekend. Keith Thurman, undefeated fighter. It's going to be a good fight if you're in Vegas. It's going to be good.
We were going to go, but then it's like $800
a ticket. Manny Pacquiao's 15 years past his prime.
And it's Manny Pacquiao.
I disagree.
Oh,
see, I think Pacquiao's going to knock this guy out, and it's going to be Floyd Mayweather versus Pacquiao too. He wasn't healthy last time. Okay. He wasn't.
Oh, so this is all a conspiracy. If he beats this kid, this is all scripted.
Yeah, if he beats this kid, was undefeated. Floyd Mayweather's coming back, baby.
Pacquiao's only minus 145. I mean,
Pacquiao's won four good fights in a row, and he got screwed on one of them because it was in the guy's country.
That's true.
Is in Vegas, right. So I'm going Pacquiao on this one.
Joe, what is the over-under on Lifshatz putting up a cornier post than you when it's his wedding?
Absolutely. You can take the under on that. There's no way in hell I'm putting that up. No way.
And Joe Murray
Somebody said there was a hole in one this morning.
No way. No way.
I got two people telling me it was like 4 hours into the tournament.
I'm telling you, man, that happens almost every major tournament these days.
If that happened, then I already lost. That's why I gave you the Pacquiao pick. Wow. Was there really a hole in one today?
I just had four people have just contacted me and said that there was already a hole in one. It happened around like 5 a.m. this morning.
Well, you got to really like golf to be up that early looking at it.
Nothing else to do.
Because they haven't shown it since every time I glance up, they're not showing it.
Yep. Is it Emiliano Grillo? Makes the first hole in one.
That guy sucks.
Yep. Hole in one, dude. Sorry, man.
Hey, It looked good.
It did look good. It looks. You don't think it's going to happen a lot? All right. The Bankroll Boys Over Under Podcast available at the 98.5 The Sports Hub app on your smartphone or at 98.5thesportshub.com. Coming up this hour, Mr. Geddy Lee. Plus, we'll talk a little bit about David Price. We'll talk about him throughout the show. That is coming right up.
What's up? Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Down. Download the Sports Hub app today.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub, no!
It's the Bankroll Boys.
Does that count?
Yep.
With Joey Bag of Money.
And the Onion.
Okay. Get help today.
And Fist of Cash, Lift Cash. Oh!
Brady won't throw me the ball because he has no trust in me.
Rich.
I have a super dry tongue. Look.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Eck, great to see you back in the booth. How things been going?
Well, pretty good lately.
Good to hear it.
You know, I don't want to bebop around it. You know, it's brutal, really, because it's a very unfortunate set of circumstances. But I think, you know, everybody wants to move on. I'm the guy that wants to move on. And the fans, I want to say the fans have been great. The support that they've given me is incredible. But let's move on. The Red Sox are trying to win.
.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. That's obviously Dennis Eckersley talking about the confrontation he had with David Price on the team plane. Now they've changed a bunch of rules about how the media is supposed to handle things, and so now the media gets in before the players. And if you don't remember the story, Dennis Eckersley came on the plane and he was walking past the players, and David Price stood up and he said, "Hey, look, it's a guy who the game's so easy for him, thinks the game is so easy." And then he tried to respond, and then Price told him to get the F out of there. And then Price came up to the front of the plane to talk to, I think it was Dombrowski, but someone in the front office. And before he could get through, David Price again said to get the F out of there, and people were cheering. And the thing that set this all off is Rodriguez threw a pitch, and Eckersley said, "Yuck." Now, if you remember, it is not only David Price who is thin-skinned. Jackie Bradley Jr. at one point asked their PR guy if he could take a picture with Dennis Eckersley outside of the team plane, and Eckersley thought it was kind of weird but did it. And then Jackie Bradley Jr. put it on Twitter or Instagram and said, "Thanks to this guy for keep saying what I can't do," or something along those lines.
Yeah, it was kind of a dick move.
Yeah, well, no, it was a dick move. Now, I understand if you're a player, you don't like to be criticized, but the David Price thing, first of all, he wasn't the one that was criticized. And second of all, it's such an obvious attempt to become a quote-unquote leader and to get people behind your back. It was very strange. And so Chad Finn from The Globe wrote an article about Dennis Eckersley, and they touched on that. And Eckersley said he, you know, didn't want to get into it, and no one ever apologized to, or David Price never apologized.
Well, I have the quote. So, okay. So I mean, there's an article today where Chad kind of follows it up, because this article had been printed for like a day and nobody had made anything about it. But then
I had read it yesterday. I didn't think anything of it.
Yeah, and Chad Finn is saying, and like a day later, it picked up steam because David Price like retweeted. An article that was talking about the airplane ambush is what they called it, but it was one line. And the way Chad Finn said was that there's no way I could talk about his broadcasting career and not, I had to bring it up. I asked him the question, and he said out of the hours and hours in which I talked to him, this was maybe a matter of 1 minute. And the quote was, quote, I don't plan on saying a word to him. I don't plan on seeing him either. He said, I don't really give a blank one way or another. I don't really care. And I don't think he cares one way or another. That was the quote. That was it. And then David Price yesterday takes that article, retweets it with a bunch of crying laughing emojis.
Which, by the way, if you're using that, kind of reevaluate that and think of that you are a man.
Yeah.
The crying laughing emoji is unacceptable for anyone with a penis to put up.
And then someone said, why don't you put this behind him? And he said, I had a meeting set up to apologize with him, and he backed out that day. Get your facts right. And then another person said, why do you continue to mention this? And he said, because Eck needs attention. This is all David Price, like fighting with people on Twitter. Same as every broadcast. Ha, ha, ha. Eight pitches are thrown, and he's sitting there talking about something he did 30 years ago with zero mention of what's going on. And then the report is that Alex Cora took him aside and talked to him about these tweets, and I guess he then noticed that he's going to have to speak to the press, and he tweeted out, today is going to be lit. Hashtag stay tuned.
Yeah, and he met one of the reporters, and I think it was a guy from Mass Live, and he said, the guy from Mass Live asked him a question. He said, not until everyone else is here.
Oh, yeah.
Light it up today, so mother effers.
So David Price got in front of the press yesterday.
And by the way, just real quick, how the hell does David Price know that Eckersley's talking about himself? I understand hearing that he said yuck, or I understand hearing if he insulted someone, but like, how do you know the pattern of his broadcast?
Well, you watch it.
You're obviously going home and watching it. You're obviously going home and watching the game and listening to what he says. I mean, you're obsessed at this point. I mean, his grudges with the media are fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Well, I just want to know, let's play some of this audio here. So here is David Price standing in front of the media, and very strangely, 2 years after this whole thing happened, talking to the press about it.
The fact that it was over two years ago now, the fact that he wanted to move on, and since then he's went on the radio and talked about it, he's done it again. In 2017, I addressed it. I told you guys on front of the camera.
Why don't you smack your lips a little bit more, too, and be more annoying? Mm. Mm. Like he's putting on lipstick. Mm.
In 2017, I addressed it. I told you guys on front of the camera that I wish I'd have handled it differently. I did it again in 2018 in spring training on day one. Said the same thing. We had a meeting set up in 2017 here at the field. Got here early, an hour and a half, 2 hours after I get here. They come and tell me that he's not coming. You know, we had a meeting. He backed out. I was going to tell him, you know, I apologize. I didn't handle it the right way, and it continues to come up. There's no reason for it.
All right, stop it for a second. So I've been hearing people giving Eckersley crap for, well, if there was a meeting set up and Eckersley didn't go, then that's obviously not what you should do. Why does Eckersley have to go to that meeting? He's not required to do anything. Price was a dick to him. Why am I required, if someone's an a-hole to me, for me to change my schedule to meet somebody who is an a-hole to me? I don't have to do that.
Turn the other cheek?
No, that's like...
Look at the Bible.
That is something. So when someone does something to you, like you don't owe that guy any kind of FaceTime. I heard that yesterday, like Eckersley getting criticized for that. I'm like, no, he And by the way,
but even if he had apologized to his face, if it came up again, this whole thing would still be happening. I mean, Price would still be talking about this to the media and still be offended because he's offended by everything. And he spends his time on Twitter or playing Fortnite. And every time we're listening to the station and Fortnite gets mentioned, my kids go insane. And they finally want to listen to something.
Honestly, I just think it's trash. You know, he had an unbelievable career, 25 seasons. He's a Hall of Famer. I saw his special on MLB Network. It was cool. The one thing that definitely stood out to me, he had zero former teammates in that interview. Not one. Talking about him. It was him talking about himself.
As opposed to you, who stood up on the plane and got everyone behind you. Why don't you get call Moore up his ass? I mean, my God. Now you're watching the specials on him on the MLB Network. I mean, you're a
single white female.
No, yeah, you're like a defense attorney, like sifting through all these documents. He's obsessed with them.
Yeah, by the way, and this was clarified this morning in the Boston Globe, in that documentary, interviews with former teammates Mark McGwire, Bruce Hurst,
of course,
Boston,
there was,
Jerry Ray,
of course,
Fred Lynn.
There was, of course. And you know what? I bet you he didn't even watch the thing. I bet you he just had someone tell him, like someone tells, or he read it on Twitter. I bet you one person like posted it on Twitter.
I bet he watched every second of it.
Then how would he not know the guys were in it?
Because he's dumb. I don't know.
I mean, there's being dumb, and then there's like just having been lobotomized. I mean, if he doesn't, I don't know.
What's gonna make him happy?
Nothing. He won't be happy.
Like, he
ever.
Just won the World Series. He got to sit back and do that. I hold all the cards now.
He was in a position of power. All he had to do was stay quiet and stay off of social media, and he would continue to fool everyone. I was fooled. Honest to God, I was fooled. David Price pitched some great games in the World Series last year. He was the Red Sox most reliable starter in the playoffs last year. And he was damn right. He held all the cards. All the stuff that was said about him was gone. And he was quiet during spring training. And everything was perfect. All he had to do was say a couple of words. You know what? That's in the past. I addressed it there. There's no need to bring it back up now. Boom. Done. Rise above it. Don't mention it. Go on with your life. And it turns out he was the same guy he's always been. He's just been able to hide it a little bit better.
And also, he has no idea of the context of the conversation. I mean, he doesn't know that Eckersley was asked about it.
There's no need to bring up the fact that you're a really awesome teammate and he's really not, even though that's wrong. There's no reason to bring that stuff up that had nothing to do with the conversation. And yet you bring it up because you got to get in the last word and you got to prove how awesome you are, even though you are not a Hall of Fame pitcher. And he had a much better career than you will ever have. Right. I don't understand any of this.
We will get back to this stuff coming up at 8 o'clock. But first, a very special guest, a man who used to wear silken robes and sing about a society of personal freedom, Atlas Shrugged. The Hobbit, all of which are referenced in many, many, many of this man's art. We will have that for you. Here are the headlines.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich. 98.5.
For less.
For the latest podcasts, for the latest sports news, and for Toucher and Rich, download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
Dude, did you even go hemispheres on the people?
I mean, listen, if you want me to bust out hemispheres, I just thought since he's doing a radio interview, spirit of radio.
Oh, very clever. It went over my head. Geddy Lee, of course, of Rush, has been spending his time traversing the globe, putting together his new book, a big, beautiful book of bass. I've heard him talk about this. It did indeed take him all over the world. He is doing a signing at Brookline Booksmith. And that will be going on at 6 p.m. Mr. Geddy Lee, hello.
Hello there. How are you guys?
We are fantastic. Now, are you going to attend the game tomorrow? It's a day game, the Blue Jays Red Sox.
Oh, I didn't realize that my Blue Jays were in town. So, I don't know. I have to look into that.
I think I can get you a ticket for face value. I play no favorites.
To consider.
Just because you're in some band don't mean that you get him for free, Mr. Lee. talking about Fenway Park.
Now, you're like a huge fan, obviously, of the team. We always see you behind. I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting whenever you randomly will turn on like a Blue Jays game, and you'll be right there behind home plate. Now, do you watch the entire game, or you bring a book with you, don't you?
It's not a book to read. I do score the games. It does give me something to do in those long innings, especially these days when our pitching is getting shelled. But, I'm a fan. I try to get to as many games I can throughout the summer. I've been traveling a lot this summer, so I've missed quite a few games. But I try to get there when I can.
Now, obviously, this is a book of base and a lot of the bases that you have and a lot of the bases that you've tried to acquire. And has this replaced your because you had one of the best, biggest private collections of baseball memorabilia out of anyone, right?
Well, yeah, I've been fanatical about that stuff for quite a few years, and I am a collector by nature. Ever since I was a kid, you know, I collected stamps, as all nerdy kids do. And then when I got into music, I started collecting vinyl, and really that led to me wanting to be a musician. And I still have my old vinyl collection. And then when I was traveling around, you know, year in and year out on the road, I became a baseball nut, and then I decided I wanted to have souvenirs of the game, and that sort of turned into learning about the history of the game for me. So when I started collecting bass guitars, it was rather late in my career. You know, I'd already been, you know, touring for over 40 years, and somebody offered me a vintage Fender guitar from 1953. And it sort of sparked an interest because I realized I'd been holding this instrument for so many years in my hands without really knowing anything about its beginnings or its evolution, who invented it, when did it first make an appearance. So those are the kind of things that usually spark my interest. And then once I get hooked on learning about that, I end up diving deep into the rabbit hole. And so 250 bases later, I figured I better put them in a book to justify my madness.
Now, which one do you think has the best story along with it? Out of all the bases, the one that you look at and you laugh, you're like, wow, there's a great story that goes along with this guy.
Well, there are quite a few great stories have surfaced. One of my favorites is I found this really rare version of Vox bass that was made in the UK in the early 60s, and I found it in Malaysia, and the gentleman who owned it had bought it from the original owner, and he sent it along with pictures of him and his band. And if you can just imagine through the 60s, you know, what a rock band looked like coming from Malaysia, it was a whole different vibe. And a very sweet story that accompanied this guy, and he took such great care of it. So, I mean, that's one of the stories that stands out. There are others. I found this wonderful 64 Fender Jazz bass, and it came from a single owner in Ireland. And when we opened the case, and this is a guy who played an Irish show band, and so when we opened the case, all you could smell was Guinness and cigarettes. You know, it was obviously it spent its life, you know, playing in every kind of pub across Ireland. And this became, you know, his escape. This was his great escape. So there are lots of stories like that where you find an instrument that's been the guy's real love, his passion for all these years.
Now we're talking to Geddy Lee. Geddy, one of my wife's favorite concerts that she's ever been to was Rush, and she said it was because it's the only concert she ever went to where she didn't have to wait even 1 second to get into the women's restroom. There was almost no women at the show, whereas all of us at the show here in the studio have seen you multiple times. What was it like being in a band that was huge? And, you know, a lot of people get into bands to meet women, and you finally get big, and then you realize, man, this is just like a bunch of dudes who like our band.
Yeah, if you're joining a rock band to meet women, you don't join Rush.
But you guys, like, toured with Kiss and stuff.
Yeah,
you got, like, the runoff from other bands, you know?
Well, what was really cute in the last, I would say, 15 years of our touring was the women that are Rush fans took great offense to those comments, right? So they then took it upon themselves to make their presence known at our shows. So I remember one time looking out and seeing a giant banner that says Mythbusters, Women Who Love Rush, and there was this, you know, big section that was nothing but women holding these banners. So yeah, over the years, of course, our demographics changed. We got more families coming to our shows, which was really nice. We got, you know, three generations of Rush fans, and women started sneaking in.
All right, so one of the things, and I've watched multiple documentaries with you guys, and obviously the relationship that the three of you have, but you and Lifeson have known each other for so long, and Neil Peart is kind of an odd fella, and he's had terrible things happen in his life, but did he ever write lyrics where you and Lifeson looked at each other and said, like, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, this is some weird next-level stuff.
Well, I would say there's usually one song every album where we scratch our heads a little bit. But the great thing about being such good pals, and also the great thing about having the real kind of relationship we had, this was all about whatever he would write lyrically would all be all about what we responded to. So if there was some part of one song that we responded to quite strongly, but the rest of it was a bit of a head scratcher, we could just, you know, I would just go back to him and say, look, this part is really, you know, really hitting home. Can we, you know, make that the central part of the song? So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that happens in a band, you know, and there's not every piece of music Alex and I have written that he was in love with either. So it's all part of a partnership.
Now, who convinced who to rap in Roll the Bones?
Well, that was kind of everybody's idea, because Neil had written this really cool section, yet we weren't a traditional rap band, so it was obvious us to just start rapping would have seemed odd. So we started figuring out different ways we could handle it, and we went through a list of what we called guest artists that maybe could come in and do the rap. At one point, we really wanted to get John Cleese from Monty Python to do it. And then in the end, we decided, well, we'll just disguise my voice and create this electronic robotic kind of figure, and that's pretty much how we handled it.
You know, it's I was thinking about it, and I think the very first time I heard Geddy Lee's voice, I was a kid, and it wasn't, you know, of course, the classic way people got into Rush, those early albums. I believe it was Take Off to the Great White North, the Bob and Doug McKenzie parody song with Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas. And that was like an SCTV collaboration that you did back in the day, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. That's my biggest hit single, guys. Come on. I went to school with Rick Moranis. I'd known him pretty much most of my life. And I bumped into him from time to time at, like, the Juno Awards or different events in Canada. And when their segment of SCTV got so huge, and they decided that they were going to do an album, he called me right away. He said, look, we have an actual pop song. Would you come down and sing on it? So I was more than happy to begin my life in comedy in that way. So it was great fun. I was really happy to be part of the team for that.
Yeah, because people who don't see you live probably don't realize the sense of humor that the band has. I mean, you guys, you know, use comedians and stuff in your visual presentations. And I will say this, and this is without any exaggeration, Alex Lifeson's appearance on the Trailer Park Boys is the ultimate of all musicians guest starring on shows. That is the best one of all of them. When they kidnap Alex Lifeson.
Yeah, no, that's great. People that know Al, and even our fans who understand his personality, know that he's the effing funniest guy you'll ever meet. You know, he is just a sweetheart of a guy, and he's hilarious. So he hooked up with the Trailer Park Boys as sort of pals, and then he ended up playing a big part in their show, and he's still very close with those guys.
So Geddy Lee, there's this adage. He's got the he's going to be signing his book tomorrow night at the Brookline Booksmith. And there's an old adage that
get
people
in line
say,
early.
Get in line early. It's going to be packed. Is that athletes want to be musicians and musicians want to be athletes. As you being such a sports fan, like who was the athlete that surprised you the most was a giant Rush fan?
Well, I met quite a few, but I think when I first met Randy Johnson, that was a bit of a surprise. And I didn't realize what a serious music fan he was, and I remember him coming to a show in Seattle when he was playing with the Mariners, and he knew all the tunes. I mean, he was a drummer himself, and so he was a big Neil Peart fan, obviously, and so he wanted to say hey, and he, I guess, knew a lot of the guys from the Seattle scene, because that was right around the same time that the grunge scene was happening in that part of the country. So he came out to a gig, and we hit it off right away because, of course, I'm a baseball nut. And when I eventually visited him at his home and saw his music collection, it was mind-blowing. Like, he has an extensive collection of rare vinyl and is really quite a knowledgeable dude. So he was a big surprise to me.
Well, Geddy, you might not know this, but here locally there is a Super Bowl champion, a legend. He's now a famous broadcaster on ESPN who we did not know was a massive fan of yours. Do you know Teddy Bruschi from the New England Patriots by any chance?
No, I don't. I'm afraid I don't.
Okay, he is a huge presence. He's a very large gentleman.
And just because his name is Teddy and your name is Geddy,
so,
that had nothing to do with it.
So we one day had Teddy Bruschi in studio, and we said to him, we're like, we must have been loopy. We've been up for hours and hours, and we said, hey, listen, we want to do a game where you do the lyrics to Rush, and it would be called Geddy Bruschi. Would you be into that? He's like, yeah, Rush. Heck yeah, I'll do that. We're like, whoa, okay, all right. So this is something we developed called Geddy Bruschi. This is Teddy Bruschi. I just want to play you this quick 20-second clip. Teddy Bruschi.
All right.
As Geddy Lee.
A modern-day warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride. Though his mind is not for rent, don't put him down as arrogant. His reserve, a quiet defense. Riding out the day's events. The river.
So that right there is Geddy Bruschi.
So he's a rap artist, you're saying?
Yes. It's probably the biggest thrill of your career.
Right. Well, you can turn on ESPN during the NFL season. He'll be all over the place. He's one of their head anchors now, and he's a friend of Tom Brady. So there you go.
Okay. And so, real quick, just before we promote the book again. So Rush is over now, right? Correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you and Alex, are you planning to do anything possibly together?
Well, we see each other all the time, so it's always possible that we could do something, but we haven't made any plans at this stage.
Have you written music?
I haven't written any songs. I've been writing this big, beautiful book of bass for the last couple of years, and now I'm out on the road, blah, blah, blahing about it. So when that's all said and done, I have all these bass guitars that will be staring at me at home. So it is possible that I will feel some sense of guilt and responsibility and go seek gainful employment in some manner.
Yeah, Geddy Lee's big, beautiful book of bass. It is it's a like a table book. It's a coffee table book, if I'm not mistaken. And it has a very visual, and it has the stories behind the instruments and why Geddy Lee enjoys them so much. And he will be signing books. He's doing this all the time, so be mindful that his right hand could be an incredible amount of pain. But he will be at the Brookline Booksmith, 279 Harvard Street in Brookline at 6 p.m. I would suggest lining up early. I've heard a great deal about this book, and Geddy Lee, it's an absolute pleasure, and congratulations on the book and much success.
Thank you so much. It's nice to talk to you guys.
Oh, finally, I meant to ask you, because you're the only one who likes it as much as I do, your favorite J.R.R. Tolkien book.
Oh, well, I guess you'd have to say The Hobbit.
Boom!
Did you like the three-movie adaptation of The Hobbit, or were you not a fan?
No, I love him. I'm a sucker for that stuff. And I think Peter Jackson did such a great job with all those, reinventing all those great scenes from those books. So I'm a fan.
I'm a Silmarillion guy, just between you and me.
All right. Well, listen, leave them
in. All right. Alone. Nice.
All right. Geddy Lee, go see him at the Brookline Booksmith. 6 o'clock, get in line early. The big, beautiful Book of Bass is what it is. He's traveled the world. Thank you so much, Mr. Geddy.
Thanks, Geddy.
Thank you very much. Go Jays.
There you go. Well, sure. Fine. That's just fine with me.
Invisible airwaves crackle with light. Bright antenna, Bristol with the energy.
Thank you, Geddy.
This is Teddy Bruschi, and I am Geddy Bruschi. Emotional feedback on timeless wavelength, bearing a gift beyond price.